We want to welcome all of our listeners to another episode of MRP, Minority Report Podcast with Eric and Carell. Each episode, we talk with real operators and leaders in media, tech, and business. And today joining us is Crystal Foote. Crystal is an award-winning marketer, author, DE&I champion, entrepreneur, and founder of Digital Culture Group. Let's jump in and get to know Crystal. Crystal, welcome. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Carell, for having me.
Excited to have you and excited to learn a whole lot more about you. But for the folks that don't know you, tell us about where you're joining us from today. Where is Crystal Foote today in the world?
Well, today I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, the amazing Atlanta, Georgia. But yesterday I was in like Denver. So to your point, it's going to change every day almost.
That's right. That's right. And for those listeners, we've got more Atlanta alum here, it seems like. So that's exciting. And Crystal, tell us about what you're up to these days for work. What's keeping you busy?
Well, being in sales, as Carell knows, you know, clients keep us busy, which is amazing. Busy is great in advertising sales. Also coming up with innovative solutions, it keeps me busy. And then also my book, The Inclusivity Superheroes, that keeps me busy as well.
I can't wait to ask you a whole lot of questions about your book, but tell us a little bit about you too. Tell us about where you were born and raised and where you grew up.
So I was born in Oakland, California. Shout out to the Bay Area. I was raised in Vallejo, California, which is near Napa Valley. So it's like Napa Valley, then it's American Canyon, and then you hit, you know, Napa. And then I decided, you know, it's too easy in Vallejo. I have grapes in my backyard. Like I'm right next to Napa Valley. So I decided to take the jump and move to New York City to start my career in advertising.
Crystal, tremendous background working for some amazing companies. I'll name them so you don't have to. MEC, RGA, Publicis. Then you moved into tech, right? You moved into Exponential and Amobee. And tell us about how that started and kind of like your climb through all those great companies.
Yes. So I started agency side in New York City, and I decided that I needed a break from this fake social life that I was trying to, you know, create for myself in New York City. And I wanted a backyard, a front yard, and I wanted just more peace and work-life balance. So I moved to Atlanta, which I didn't know anyone here, no friends, no nothing, started completely new. And when I was on the agency side here, because I didn't know anyone, I decided to go on the sales side. So that way I can explore the Southeast more, get to know more people, and really build my ecosystem of like strong relationships in the industry.
West Coast, East Coast, South. I'm going to put you on the spot. Which one you prefer? Which one you prefer?
I love California because that's where I'm from. That's where my heart is, right? New York made me into the woman I am today. And I will forever be grateful for that. The hustle and the grind definitely came from New York City. And I would say the more personable, softer side of me is from the South, definitely from Atlanta. I had to adjust my character coming down here because the culture is not giving hurry up and run and do something so fast that you feel like you left your body behind because your brain is 5-10 feet ahead of you. I had more of a work-life balance here. It made me slow down. So I'm very appreciative of Atlanta for giving me that.
Yeah. And you raise a good point there because very different areas geographically where you live, but very different areas culturally where you live as well too. And I have to imagine that in each of those places you've learned something different, something new about people. How has that level of diversity from a geo perspective helped you in your career?
Oh, I think it really helped me understand more about diversity and also understanding that it's really a beautiful thing when you can learn from places where you've never lived before or it's not your background. I think it makes you smarter, to be honest, right? Because you know that you can't have that same type of go, go, go mentality in the South, but you also appreciate what the South has to offer because they are different. And I just really, I embraced that journey and I'm so grateful for it because it also allows me to empathize with different people and to see, you know, their point of view. And I love it.
Awesome. Awesome. Tell us about the book, The Inclusivity Superheroes, A Tale of Diversity and Unity.
Yes. So that is my passion project. And being in advertising, you know, we influence a lot of things. We influence consumers. As a salesperson, we influence agencies and advertisers. And a lot of times I felt like I had to do a lot of education about why inclusivity and diversity really needs to be in the fold of things when we're trying to create advertising campaigns. And so because of that, I said, what can I do to have more scale and communicate that message? And I decided to make a children's book because if you start with those foundational concepts really early on in a child's life, the more accepting they are of diversity, inclusivity, and understanding of unity as they get older. So hopefully it's not too much education that you have to do as a salesperson when you approach that person because they already have that background. They already have that knowledge because of how they were raised.
That's great. Crystal, I have to ask you, when you were writing the book, were there any personal experiences you kind of drew from, but from a child's perspective, right? Like if you, you know, dug back and were thinking, hey, how can I take some of that and maybe transport that onto some pages? Was that part of your process?
Most definitely. So being from California, being from a diverse background myself, and having an auntie that's Filipina, and for every family occasion, she would bring lumpia. And that was like so near and dear to me. And so I incorporate that in the book as well and a recipe on the website. So children can also have some type of experience with other cuisine. Also, Mexican food is really big in California. I had more tortillas in my refrigerator and my like kitchen counter than I had actual bread. When I came to New York, I used to cook breakfast for my friends and it would always be breakfast tacos. And they're like, why are you making breakfast tacos all the time? Like, what happened to like the toast and stuff like that? I was like, that's not how I was raised. I was raised on tortillas. So I incorporated that as well. So like different cuisines to help really expand people's mindset about, you know, trying different things and different cultures. So I took that, but I also had a focus group of two. So my children that also gave me their input about what they wanted to see and how they felt when they saw the book. So that was really helpful because at the end of the day, my audience, of course, are children. I want to make sure that they see themselves in the book and they were comfortable and had a lot of fun reading it too.
That's great. That's awesome. And being Filipino and Guatemalan myself, I certainly know tortilla and soy sauce one night and the next day, it's a whole other thing. So here it is, Chino Latino. I'm definitely there.
And I'm just over here getting hungry right now.
I mean, Carol, we could knock back some lumpia. Oh man, it'd be so good. I'm curious, you know, with the success of the book and you know, you're sort of reaching out and connecting with kids, take us through a couple magical moments that you've had when children discover the book and even families sort of discover the book.
Yes. So when children discover the book, they say, oh, that looks like me. And so that makes me feel so good because I have a page and it's like a spread in the book where it's children of all different backgrounds and all different abilities. And even one of the characters in there, one of the main characters, Aisha, she's Caribbean. And my husband is Caribbean as well. He's Antiguan. So having some of the bun and cheese recipe in there and the colors as well, what that represents, is a very proud moment, I feel like, for the children who read it because they're like, yes, thank you for including me. My daughter, even though the character in there, her name is Victoria, she doesn't look like me. I still relate with Aisha because she does more of the things that I do and she looks like me. So, you know, that feels really good. And then I also have tips in the back of the book for grownups. So that way they can have these conversations with their children about inclusivity. So that way they can weave that into their professional life as an adult. You know, maybe you need some updates about what you can do, but also in their personal lives with their children and how their children communicate at school, on the playground, and in their own little, you know, play dates as well.
That's great. There's something for everyone there, it sounds like. And has this kind of inspired you to perhaps take this on and extend it and do more with writing?
I would love to. So definitely thinking about the second book. Of course, when I was done with the first one, I was like, whew, a lot of work. We got there to the finish line. My daughter was like, okay, let's talk about, you know, the second book. What are the concepts? I'm like, okay, wait a minute, 7-year-old. Let's celebrate this moment for a little bit, please. I still have my day job as well. So right. Let's take our time.
Crystal, where can people find the book?
They can find it on Amazon, or they can go to the website, theinclusivitysuperheroes.com.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you for that. When Eric introduced you at the beginning, there's a lot that you do, a lot of titles, right? And it's all good. Where do you find the time? Like, how do you manage your day to day? And I ask that because, one, I'm curious, but I know our listeners, that's one of the top questions that they like to hear from our guests is like, how do they go about managing their day? What does time management look like? Work-life balance, if there is such a thing, right? So tell us, what does a typical day look like for you?
So to be honest, that work-life balance statement alone is interesting for everybody because they match differently. And for me, my secret sauce is really commingling the two. Because of my relationships that I have, professional, personal, sometimes that intermingles and allows me to enjoy my professional relationships like my personal ones because we have gone through so much together or because we have an amazing bond that we do things like travel together or go to concerts together. So it doesn't feel like I'm working, right? And then sometimes their children go to the same school as my children. So we have play dates. And so we're able to like talk about work and then talk about personal stuff and then have our kids play. So it's really like an amazing formula. Also, my children's school opened a co-working space right after kind of like transitioning from home life to like being back in the workspace, you know, during the pandemic. And so it allows me to drop them off at school, go 2 minutes across the street to my office, and then we all go home together. So I am really saving 4 hours in a day from like commuting time because we live like an hour away going back and forth or going to see clients because of that co-working space. So again, just finding opportunities where both professional and personal can commingle. You know, even if you have to go get your hair done, making sure you have your laptop with you doing it at the same time, making it work. It's all about that. Or else I would be going crazy right now and we would be drinking wine during this podcast.
We've done that before, right, Eric?
We've done that. Yes, we have. Yep.
What gets you excited? What motivates you?
Oh, I mean, again, being a mom, my children are excited, right? Seeing that I'm leaving a positive impression on them and being a positive influence for them to recognize that in the work that we're doing professionally, even personally, but really professionally, to let them know that you can have your dream job and still really positively influence the world around you and do what's right. And so my children keep me excited knowing that we work really hard and helping the industry understand inclusivity. That makes me happy. When someone reaches out to me and they say, thank you for teaching me something new, you know, that means a lot.
Gotcha. What's one thing that you wish you were better at?
Oh, playing the piano. Okay. I can't play it at all. So I love to entertain, as you know, as part of our work.
Yeah. But I
love that there was a piano at, let's say, a bar or at a restaurant we went to just start jamming out. That would be so cool to me. But I'm not good at playing the piano, really any instrument.
Yeah, I've always wanted to learn how to play the saxophone. I've never gotten there yet. So
one day.
Crystal, I want to ask you a little bit about your family. We had our buddy Doug Melville on a previous podcast talk about an incredible, amazing true story called Invisible Generals about his family. And I wanted to ask you about an incredible family member of yours. Can you tell our audience and tell our listeners and viewers who Sergeant Alfred B. Hilton is?
Yes, you did your homework, Eric. Look at you. Alfred B. Hilton is my great-great uncle, and he is an American War hero, fought in the American Civil War, and a Medal of Honor recipient. And he is known for carrying our colors of the country, the nation's flag. And he told, you know, his troops, save the colors, because at the end of the day, he wanted to make sure that he was really fighting for the equality of everyone in this country. And he got injured, but was like, you know what? This means more than my life. And because he got injured, he came back, you know, after everything was said and done, came back home. And his injury actually took his life because he wasn't able to get the medical treatment due to segregation at that time, which is very unfortunate because he fought for our country. I am very proud of his legacy. It is the heartbeat of everything that I do, everything from work to personal. And he has a statue in Havity Grace, Maryland that we visit and pay respect to. But I'm so proud of what he has done.
That's fantastic. I was just going to ask you about what it's like to actually see a statue represented physically there that you can go to, others can go to. What's that feel like when you see that?
Honestly, I feel that every day I wake up that it is intentional in the work that I do. And that because he fought for our country and, you know, died at such a young age, that I just want to make him proud in heaven and my family proud. I mean, that is such a legacy to live up to. And I know we'd never be able to accomplish that, but just to know that I'm doing my part in the modern day of, you know, corporate America and what we're doing from a work standpoint, I just have to keep on pushing and making sure that I do focus on inclusivity, on equity, because those things really are important. And I've had, you know, my great uncle die for this country, for fighting for that. And I'll continue that as well.
Crystal, tell us a little bit about your family. Tell us about where they came from and how they ended up where they did.
Wow. So on my mother's side, my grandfather and his family, they are Jewish and they came from Latvia, Romania, and then migrated to Chicago, Illinois. And my grandmother and her family, they're from the Maryland, New York area. My grandmother was raised in the Bronx, and she decided that she wanted to go to California. My grandmother is very much a person before her time. And she moved to California to experience life there because she was like, you know, I grew up in New York. I got into NYU, but it's not really the college for me. A lot of people I know are going here. And she went to California. That's where she met my grandfather. And they have three amazing children, my mother included in there. And my father's side, they came from South Boston / Halifax, Virginia. And he's one of seven. And he decided, you know, I'm going to come from this very rural area and go to Howard University, HBCU. And that's where he met my mother. And that's where everything started. You know, the family of three, myself, my siblings, my sister, my brother, and we grew up in California. And I decided I wanted to go to New York to start my career and then came down here to Atlanta.
You're a mom now.
I'm a mom now and a wife.
And a wife.
And a dog mom.
And a dog mom. We should have added those in the beginning.
The most important titles.
That's right. That's right. What kind of interesting lessons do you feel that you're passing on now to your kids and even sharing with your husband?
I think empathy, and that would be probably the number one lesson, empathy and understanding what moves people, what motivates people, what gets people really excited to do their day to day. And also, again, positivity. We have a choice when we wake up, either to wake up on the right side of the bed or the wrong side of the bed. And I choose to wake up on the right side of the bed and pay gratitude because I am awake and I get to see my children and, you know, we're healthy. And so that really, I feel like, are the lessons that I want them to learn from me.
Crystal, what advice would Crystal today give Crystal first starting out in her career?
I would tell myself, I'm not going to date myself, how old I am or, you know, how long I've been in the industry, but I would probably tell my younger self that there are going to be challenges, but do not let that break you down, to keep pushing, because there is something to learn in every challenge that I face. I'm not going to lie. When I moved to New York, I was like, you know, I'm here, big city, here I go. But I was terrified and was afraid to ride the subway because I was by myself in the big city. And I called my mom crying one day and I was like, I want to come back home. It's expensive here. I came to afford toilet paper. Like, you know, this is just not what I thought would be. And she said, you're not coming back home. And my mother is a very much so, like, she didn't want me to leave. So for her to say, I knew it was serious, that she knew that I was starting my future there, right? She knew it was bigger than her and me. She knew that it was something that really was destined for me to achieve in my life, to be in New York, to make the connections, to work on the accounts that I did. I mean, I'm very grateful for having to lead the agency side for Chanel as a woman of color. And the ads didn't look like me, but educating the marketing team at Chanel, or leading Richemont, which includes Cartier and Montblanc and, you know, several other brands. So I'm so grateful for those experiences. And I'm so grateful that my mother said, don't leave, stay. Because if I left, I would not have had those same experiences. And I probably wouldn't be who I am today.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. All right. Fun question. What's in your music rotation?
When I'm at work or when I'm in the car?
Well, you decide. You tell us.
Very different. It's very different. So when I'm at work and I need to make sure that I am all the way in, knee deep, eyebrow deep, I listen to jazz music. And there's a station on Spotify, like Jazz for Work, that I listen to. Very relaxing, because as you know, we are in a very stressful type of environment. Yeah. We get calls and fire drills and all this stuff. We got to be on it. And so I listen to jazz music to kind of balance that out, that energy. But if I'm in the car, if I'm listening to music, because typically it's like my university on wheels. But when I'm listening to music, this is going to sound so bad. It's, you know, some like 1990s Jay-Z, you know.
There you go. We're with you. We're with you.
Didn't even know. We're with you.
Listen, if anyone actually pays attention to what Jay-Z's saying in his catalog, what he's talking about can help you in the corporate world, period, as well, too. So,
right, yeah. 100%. So, you know, 96 was a good year for Jay when he came. And I was listening to his music. I've always been a fan. And so that just puts me in the mood like, all right, let's do this. Very educational too.
Yeah.
Philosopher in his own right. So yep. I have a good time listening to Jay. You know, I listened to some Nas, Drake. The other day I was listening to Lil' Kim too. So, you know, I was born in the 80s. I really enjoy hip hop, old school hip hop, because I know what they're saying. I can understand it. No shade to the new rappers, but like, I understand it. And it's just nostalgia for me, you know, just like, I don't know. I just enjoy it.
Love it. Love it.
Great. Well, Crystal, it's been a lot of fun hanging out with you. Tell us again where everybody can find the book.
So they can find the book on Amazon, The Inclusivity Superheroes, A Tale of Diversity and Unity. They can go check out the website as well, theinclusivitysuperheroes.com. And if you want to follow me, see what I'm up to, reach out to me, you can go on LinkedIn, Crystal Foot. So like your foot, but with the E at the end, it's very British. But yeah, that's how you can find me. And that's how you can find the book too.
Excellent. Well, thanks again for spending some time with us. And thanks everyone for listening to another episode. Be sure to find more episodes where you find all of your audio and video. Just search for The Logo and find an excellent catalog with more great guests. Thanks again.
Thank you.